Hello, and welcome back to my Love Letter Time Machine, where we are unfolding the Victorian love story contained in the letters of two ordinary people from Yorkshire, Fred Shepherd and Janie Warburton. I'm Ingrid Birchall Hughes, and I just happen to be their great-great-granddaughter. Each week, we travel 140 years back in time to discover the latest happenings. And today, Janie has her confirmation ceremony, and we find out what she thinks of Fred's Paris job offer. Last time, we discovered that Fred had been offered a job in Paris by his old associate, Joe Gill, to become a supply clerk. He shut down the idea almost immediately, but wanted to know what Janie thought. We'll get to that a bit later on. But first, here's one of Fred's more newsy letters. Middlesbrough, the North Eastern Steel Company Limited, March the 24th, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your nice, loving, very short letter yesterday morning, love, for which I thank you. I would have written last night, but we went to the theatre to see Madame Angot, and after that they played The Waterman, all for sixpence. It was after 11 when we came out, and after we had supper, I thought it was too late to commence writing then, so I went to my virtuous couch to dream of my little darling and the mutual happiness in store for us when we are united. I enjoyed the opera very much, but should have liked you to have been there with me, and then I should have enjoyed it a very much more, darling. I think you have seen Madame Angot, dear, haven't you? I will forgive you for giving me such a short letter, love. I am sure you would be busy getting ready for your confirmation yesterday. I hope you had a happy day yesterday, darling, and that home was at least pleasant for that one day, love. We will have a good, long, serious talk at Easter, wifey, if we can manage to be alone at all, though I expect it will be rather a difficult matter. I had a letter from John Mies this morning, in which he says that he has been ill for 3 weeks and had to be in bed for several days, but he is getting better now. You will, I know, be sorry to hear that old Jack has been ill. He says, I do hope next time you come over, I shall see you, either at Darnell or here. How shall I be able to manage that, love? What do you suggest? You are quicker at expedients than I am. You forgot to tell me in your last letters what I am to bring you for your birthday, as I asked, I think. At least I meant to ask you, because you know, my darling, I am not good at choosing anything without your advice on the subject. You have earned the everlasting gratitude of our Louisa by trimming her hat, love, I have no doubt. I shall, of course, have to inspect it when I come over and give you the benefit of my extensive experience in hats. I am sorry to hear that Emma Gill was no better, love. When did you see her? Do you think she is as bad as you said in your other letter? My darling wife, I am glad that you are glad that I gave you notice, that I might feel faintish. I shall think I shall be able to give you something to refresh and stimulate you, my wife. We shall, as you say, get over the situation very comfortably, and thanks to your kind assistance in our first attempt, it has not been necessary to ask for instructions as to the mode of the operation. Oh, my darling, I do love you so much. I would give anything to have you here now. I think I should not work so long if I had a nice little wife waiting for me at home. Last night it was 9 when I got home. Same on Wednesday. There is not time to get tea and a pipe of tobacco and then away to my virtuous couch. I would much rather the virtuous couch was shared by you, my darling. There would be some pleasure in going home to see you. I do wish it was Easter, love. Don't you? I think I shall not join the choir, as I don't want to bind myself in any way until I am bound to you by the ties of wedded life, wifey. Besides, you might not care for St. Paul's Church, and I should not wish you to go there if you did not, love. I expect you will have plenty much your own way when I get you here, and I shall be, no doubt, the most docile of husbands. I will inquire into the whereabouts of the man you mentioned, love, if I see Retchford tonight. Is your mother interested in him? I hope she keeps well, and your father too. Please remember me to them, and John. Have you heard from Carrie, love, lately? I think I told you I was going in for a new suit. I have got one, and remember your preference for the navy blue serge, love. I chose that. The price was 52 and 6, but I don't think it dear. Do you, dear, think it dear? I intended writing a little last night, but it was so late I could not very well, and today we are again very busy. We are making a call of £2 per share, which means sending out circulars and call letters to each of the shareholders. I hope your cold is quite better, my darling, and that you are enjoying robust health. We are having wretched weather here now, raining incessantly, and today is snow. How is it with you? I shall look forward to another letter on Sunday, my darling. I like to get them on Sundays especially. They are the only source of enjoyment I have in this wretched place. But I must not grumble. This wretched place will enable me to get you to share it, so it is worth a little unpleasantness to have that, and remain forever, my darling wife, your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. I really love looking up the music that Fred and Janie mention. Some of it has survived in popularity to this day, such as La Fille de Madame Angot, and others like The Waterman by English composer Charles Dibdin are no longer performed. Madame Angot was by the French composer Charles Lecoq, who, in many ways, filled the rather large shoes left after the recent death of Offenbach. Depicting the story of a Parisian florist caught in a love triangle, Madame Angot was probably the most successful comic opera by the end of the 19th century, outperforming both HMS Pinafore and Die Fledermaus internationally. It blows my mind sometimes to realise that for Fred and Janie, these productions were the new popular culture. In Janie's next letter, she talks about her confirmation, and it's rather touching that Fred's mother, Anne, came to support her future daughter-in-law at the ceremony. And I love that Janie took her round Handsworth Nurseries afterwards. The nurseries were owned by Mrs. Fisher Holmes and Co. and covered an area of over 200 acres that filled the local landscape between the churchyard, behind the cross keys, west and north, all the way to the boundary of Bowden Housted's Woods. They provided employment for over 200 men, women and children, many of whom lived in Handsworth. They were not the only nurseries in Handsworth. The Laveracks, you might remember that Janie was friends with Annie Laverack, were also market gardeners, I think running the Richmond nurseries behind the Handsworth nurseries. The nurseries were highly renowned in the area for supplying fruit as well as ornamental plants and flowers. According to the local newspapers, many of the prestigious events for Sheffield seem to have been supported by lush displays of flowers from Handsworth nurseries, and they pop up in most of the local flower shows and feasts. Handsworth, March the 24th, 1882. My own darling husband, I received your very welcome letter yesterday morning. They always do me good, love. I thought I should have one, and I was not disappointed. I have just been trying to fall down the cellar steps. I had to fetch some bitter up. Kate had washed them and put sand on. I slipped on the sand, caught my elbow on the beer pipes, so saved myself from going to the bottom. I have only hurt my elbow a little. I was confirmed yesterday, love, and I said I do. It was a happy day. Our bliss will be complete when we both say, I will. Your mother and Emily came up to the church. They stopped to dinner. Then I took them through the nurseries in the afternoon. They did enjoy seeing the flowers. The azaleas were out beautifully. The flowers covered the trees. You could scarcely see a leaf. I have never been through when they looked more beautiful. I got a nice lot for your mother to take home. We came back to tea and they went home at about 5:30. Your mother said she felt much better. She thought the fresh air had done her good. You would have had a letter from Arthur yesterday, wouldn't you, love? They are all very well at your house. My darling, I am not ill. I dare say when Ted and Miss Dalton saw me, I did not look very well. I had a very bad cold. I have not felt very well this week. I have had such a pain between my shoulders and nasty headaches. I have not been fretting about you, love. I shall see you very soon now, only 14 days. Mother has gone to Sheffield today, so I have to be barmaid. Our Emma is very much put out because she has not had a chance of getting in the bar. She has been as nasty as possible. You may know how nasty that is. I would rather go to Warncliffe than stay at home and have to wait, though I would much rather have you all to myself. I think you have done quite right in refusing to go to Paris, darling. I could not bear to have you so far as that away. It is quite far enough where you are now. I knew you had had the letter. Mrs. Gill told me. Mr. Gill got your address from home. I thought you would not go. I did not see how you could leave Mr. Cooper very well. Did you tell him you had the offer? I thought I would not say anything to you until you mentioned it. Your mother wanted me to write off at once and tell you not to go. I thought, love, that if you really thought it was worth your while going, I should not try to put any hindrance in your way. But, oh, I am pleased you are not going, my own darling. It would be hard to spare you to go further away. I expect our John will be at home at Easter, but if you can put up with the bed in the clubroom, we will manage very well. I don't think our people will have any very strong objections to you stopping every night, love. I will write you a longer one for Sunday. I wish I could give just one kiss, my darling. I remain your loving, true, and faithful wife, Janie. Continued, March the 24th, 9:30 p.m. My own darling husband, Mother has got home, so I am now at liberty to give you a little more. I know you like a long one for Sunday. Mrs. Frith called yesterday and said I was to remember her kindly to you. I do wish I could see you, darling. I yearn for a glimpse of your face, dear. I feel as if I could not wait until Easter sometimes. It seems so slow in coming, but I must be patient. There is only two more weary Sundays to get through. Then we shall be happy together. I do love you, my darling, more than every. I wish I could pop over to see you tomorrow and spend Sunday with you. I wish I could get to Harrogate to see Carrie, and then I should be nearer you, but I expect it is no use thinking of such a thing. Mother says if anybody goes away this summer to stop a few days, it will be her. I am sure I should be pleased for her to go, because she does need a change. But I hope if she does go, she will take our Emma with her. We could manage without her, but I'm sure we could not with her. Continued March the 25th, Saturday. I felt so sleepy last night, I had to give up writing, so we'll finish today. My darling, I received your loving letter this morning, for which I thank you. I wish I could have gone with you to see Madame Angot and the Waterman played at the theatre. I have not seen it, love. I should have enjoyed it very much with you, darling. Everything is much more enjoyable when we are together, husband, is it not? It was too late to commence writing after you got home, love. I hope your dreams were sweet, that you were going to dream about me on your virtuous couch. I was dreaming about a wedding last night. I do not remember whether it was ours or not. I think it was. I awoke before it was over. My home was pleasant on Thursday, for once. Mother and father was in good temper. Our Emma had gone out, and that makes a great difference, so we were very quiet. I hope we shall be alone some part of the time at Easter, darling. If you stop at our house most of the nights, we will manage it somehow. I am very sorry to hear of John Mier's illness. I hardly know what we are to do to see him. He says he hopes he will be able to see you at Darnall or Wombwell. Don't you think he could come to Darnall? But it would be best to see him there. It means another day if you go to Wombwell, and I don't know how I am to spare you to all your friends. Could he not come on the Tuesday, and then you would see them all together? Just think it over and see if you can't do it that way. I am rather selfish, darling, wanting you all to myself, but I can't help it. I love you so much that I feel that when you are here, I want to keep you. I feel as if I could not bear you out of sight for a minute more than is necessary. It does seem a lifetime since I saw you and kissed you. You did mention about bringing me something for my birthday, love. I hardly know what you are to get for me, darling. I will study it over and see what I want and let you know in the meantime. But I would rather you choose something for me, but not anything expensive, as I want you to save all you can. And then at Easter I will tell you how soon we can be united, my darling, and I shall have you for my present, the best in the whole world. Mother went to a sale yesterday, an old lady higher up Cemetery Road than our Williams, and she bought 2 dozen silver-plated forks. She is going to give me half of them at least, so that will save us another sovereign, won't it, love? She got them at 6.5 each, and the lowest price to buy new ones is 22 shillings per dozen to get decent ones. And you know she has promised me the knives with the silver-plated handles, so I think we shall manage with them for a start very well, don't you, love? We shall have no glass to buy, I can beg all that. I shall be very pleased for you to inspect Louisa's hat and give us the benefit of your extensive experience, love. I am afraid Emma Gill is quite as bad as I said in my other letter. She has such a racking cough. She did not get up until 4 the day I went to see her. She is not so very far gone, but I think she might get better yet. I hope she will. You bad lad. If I had you here, I would pull your nose for saying such naughty things. I dare say you will be only too pleased to introduce yourself in to me and mine, you bad lad. I am quite shocked at you. I am sorry you have been disturbed again at night. You see, you want a bedfellow, and then perhaps you would not be so uneasy. I have seen and felt the point, in fact the whole of it, and taking it as it stands, you do have a lot to put up with. I quite agree with you there. Forgive my rudeness, husband. I do love you. The weather is rather rough here, but not very cold, so I think we will go to Warncliffe rather than stay at home to wait, because you would have to sit in the kitchen very likely, and I should hardly have a minute with you, and I begrudge a minute away from you. You spoke about buying a clock, love. Tom Gibbons has such a nice little black marble timepiece he wants to sell you for £1. I told Polly that I thought we would have it, but I would see what you said about it. It cost a good deal more, but the engagement is broken off between he and his young lady, so he wants to sell it. It is a bargain, I am sure, love. What do you think, darling? It would be less money than the one you had thought of getting, wouldn't it, love? And it would be a nice ornament for our mantelpiece. We shall have to be careful laying out our money. I think Ted will be able to start the business on £30, but they would have to be careful. I hardly think they could furnish all through on that. It would depend on how they were thinking of doing it. My darling, we would see to getting the dinner service to the station so that you would not have to carry it. I am afraid it will be a biggish box to hold all the things. Louisa said I could have a box of hers and then you could bring it back at Whitsuntide. I have not time for more, past time. I love you more than ever, my darling. I remain your loving, true and faithful wife, Janie. While Janie made some euphemistic mentions of her and Fred's intimacy, in this next letter from Fred, please be aware that he gets a bit more explicit, but still only uses mild terminology. We also get a bit of gossip concerning one of his old girlfriends, Lucy Craven. 21 Church Street, Middlesbrough, March the 26th, 1882. My own darling wife, I received your nice letter yesterday morning, which was an extra treat, love. I hardly expected it, as I had had 3 from you, but you are so good, my darling, in giving me these treats. I will reward you at Easter as well as I can for your kindness, my little wife. I wish I could kiss you just now. It is a beautiful afternoon. I should like to go for our usual Sunday afternoon's walk with you, love. I intended going for a walk this afternoon, but I thought you would want a letter tomorrow morning, so I am staying in to give you one, love. I was sorry to hear of you falling down the cellar steps. I hope it won't be serious, darling, and I was glad to hear that my mother had been up to your confirmation. I think it would do her good if she were to get out a little more, and she might do so now without it being inconvenient. I wish I could have been there as well. I should so like to have seen you. You would be sure to look nice as you always do. I am glad to hear you were not ill, my darling. Ted must have seen you when you had that severe cold. You must take care of yourself, love, while I am away. Of course, when I get you here, I shall be able to look after you. I hope the pain between your shoulders and the headache will soon be better, my darling. You must take something for them. I am glad you agree with me, wifey, in refusing the Paris offer. I thought you would do so. We always do agree so well, love. I appreciate your tact in not mentioning it first, which shall be rewarded. I'm afraid I quite forgot my mother being interested in my not going. I only thought of you. I cannot think of anyone else. You occupy my mind altogether, my darling, and it would be very hard to be further away from you. I hope I have not done anything to regret in not following it up. I shall be quite satisfied with the clubroom, love, at Easter, if it is not inconvenient to you to keep the meat somewhere else. The last night I slept there, I could smell the meat all night, and my very delicate organisation was slightly inconvenienced thereby. I must now turn to your nice, long, loving letter received this morning. I do like a long one for Sunday, darling, as you say. I am pleased that Mrs. Frith remembers me. You must remember me very kindly to her. Have you heard from Betsy Frith lately, love? I wish, like you, darling, that I could see you. But it only wants 13 days now, love, and when today is over there will be only one more Sunday to get over without you, love, and then bliss. We will not think of Harrogate, love, then. I hope your mother will give herself a few days' rest, love, this summer. I think she might have done so last, for she needed it, I thought. She ought to take your Emma, love, with her. I'm sure you would be able to manage without her. The wedding you dreamt about must have been ours, love. Who else could it be? It was a pity you woke up before it was finished. When you do wake up on the happy wedding night, love, it will have been finished, won't it? And will be very small by then. I am glad your home was pleasant for Thursday, darling. It makes a difference, evidently, when your Emma is away. Respecting John Mears, I think I shall ask him to make it convenient to go to Warncliffe on Easter Monday, and then I shall see him and save the Tuesday as well. I don't suppose he would care to come to Darnell on the Sunday, and I expect his shop will be open on the Tuesday, so that he would not be able to get away on that day. I admire your selfishness, darling, in wanting to keep me all to yourself. I am quite agreeable. Think it over, what I am to get for your birthday, love. You might mention several things that you would like, and then I might be able to get one of them. I really don't know what to get for you. I think I should like to get something useful. I cannot buy you another lady's companion, because you have one, and when I am over, you'll have another. You must express my thanks to your mother, love, for the silver forks. She is very good. She has evidently made up her mind to the inevitable now, though she held out a long time, didn't she? She got them very cheap, didn't she, love? She could not have given you anything more useful, darling, or more to my taste, for I detest steel forks, don't you? I think they spoil the taste of food so much. I wish you had me there, love. I would willingly submit to have my nose pulled, for I should kiss you after saying such naughty things, you Dirk. I am sorry you were shocked at my remarks, darling. I did not mean to shock you. Though I have no doubt I shall give you a shock at Easter, for I assure you it has not got any less, but larger, I think, and I feel sure that I shall be able to extinguish myself and it, especially it, and do justice to you at the same time. I expect it will be tight at first, love, as usual, in fact. I shall be disappointed if it is not, for it is nicer when it is a tight fit, don't you think so? My trousers are feeling tight at this moment. Oh, I wish I was with you. I do want a bedfellow, love, as you say, but I only want you. No one else would do for me, because we suit each other so well, you see. It could not be better, love, could it? I thought you would see the point of my remarks. Oh, you naughty girl, to say that you have seen and felt the point, in fact, the whole of it. I am shocked, and then to say that I have a lot to put up with. How should you know, my darling? Surely you have never seen and been touched by it, have you? And say you agree with me? Shocking. My darling wife, I forgive you for saying such naughty things. Is it naughty between us to speak of things? We will be good at Easter then, and not mention it at all. There, I feel so good, even now. But if the subject should crop up, you can always rely on the whole I have to put up with being entirely at your service, and I think I should not be very offended if you request the favour of it, for you know, my darling wife, that it is yours and has never been and never will be anybody's else. I love you too much, my darling, to trifle with anybody else. I should not be faithful if I did, and we have promised, my darling, to be faithful till death us do part. Shall I write to Ted and tell him that we shall be sure to go to Warncliffe on Easter Monday, love? I think it would perhaps be better, and we could go at the same time as they do. It would almost be like our Whit Monday reunion. I forgot to tell you that Ted said in his letter that Lucy Craven and Johnny Mortar had been seen up Sherland Lane in a very undignified and suggestive position, viz. Clothes up, trousers unbuttoned, etc. I am very afraid that all she would experience would be a slight tickling sensation, because he has nothing that would take her breath away or bring heaven to her. Excuse my remarks, darling. Respecting Tom Gibbons' clock, I am quite agreeable, love, to have it. Shall I send you the money, or will it wait until I bring you a further instalment at Easter to my wife? I shall tell Ted that £30 will be sufficient, I think, as you say. You did not anticipate spending even as much as that, did you, love? I shall have to give up now, as it is past time. Oh, my darling wife, I do love you so much, more and more every day, and shall always remain your loving, true, and faithful husband, Fred. We'll leave it there for now. Thank you for listening to my love letter time machine. Next time, the racy village gossip and the even racier pillow talk continues. In the meantime, perhaps you could show the podcast some support by clicking on the ratings, leaving a review, or sharing it with someone who you think might enjoy it. And if you'd like to write to me, you can at myloveletterTimeMachine@gmail.com. Until next time, take care.